Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are again. This time on time on a Tuesday, and it's the end of the month, July 30th.
Yeah, and might I say, a very happy Ramadan to you.
Ramadan?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's Ramadan. What a great holiday. You know anything about this holiday?
You fast a lot.
You fast during the day.
Yeah.
30 days or so, something like that. But then every day you have like a, potentially, you have a major feast at night and you just hang out and eat all night.
Yeah.
So you get, you know, the problem is that during the day, people are working, so they're probably a little bit miserable. But then at night, I mean, when I was in Morocco, there was parties at night everywhere. And it's, you know, it's kind of like a combination.
Do they drink there?
No.
Because they do drink in Turkey. They drink in Malaysia, the world's biggest Muslim population. Or Indonesia, I'm sorry.
Indonesia,
they drink
yeah.
in Indonesia. They drink in Malaysia. They drink in Turkey. And, you know, they're modern Muslims.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, something to say, be said about that. Let me tell you about what's going on today. Big news today in the world of potash. So potash stocks were just absolutely pummeled today. I mean, it was horrible. I looked this morning at the open or before the open, and they were just getting absolutely obliterated. What's going on? It seems that there was a big partnership between Russia and Belarus and a few other partners, and essentially one of the partners pulled out, and I'm giving the very watered-down story here. So at the end of the day, there is an end to the global potash cartel.
Oh.
So I think what that translates to is no longer any price fixing, right?
That would sound like it to me.
Mm-hmm. So these stocks are hit hard. Potash, Mosaic down about 17%. Agrium, Sequinom is down hard. CF Industries, which is in that genre, Terra Nitrogen, which was there for a while, they're more nitrogen-based products, not the potash.
Mm-hmm.
So they were down in sympathy early in the day, but then they kind of everybody realized, hey, you know what? These are not the same things. But really, I mean, I think they're down at 1.24% before coming up a little bit. So we'll see what happens with that. I mean, and then you add the added, you know, insult to injury where you're seeing corn prices and wheat prices and soybean prices come down significantly because of, you know, the cycles. You know, you have terrible droughts for 2-3 years, but then you have, you know, it moderates and then all of a sudden it's like a boom.
Yeah, and you get too much.
Right. So that's what's going on right now. I mean, corn keeps on dropping, and we're seeing that I think tonight soybeans was down $12 because of some harvest numbers that came out. So not the most exciting topic, so we'll move on. But potash –
What's the symbol for Chipotle or Chipotle?
CMG.
Because they should be benefiting.
They had a good earnings number.
And they're up 294, but the stock is selling for, 407.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's not $4.07.
No, $407. It's like
– there's no difference
between – come on, man. Will you just do the split? Get it to $40, which is what it probably should be. A 10 to 1 would be good.
Yeah, well, it would create more buyers. But, you know, in truth, the splits never – I mean, obviously, they don't change anything. But
people get excited about it. Yeah. Ooh, I'm going to have 10 times more.
Right. Now, Amazon, once again, if you look at the chart and we have our earnings overlay with coloring. So if you see that they beat earnings or missed revenues or whatever it may be, you get a green or a red little kind of doohickey. I can hover over it and see what the numbers are. Mm. And once again, there's a big miss. As a matter of fact, this quarter I thought was worse than the last few. They supposedly were and they have a surprise loss, by the way. Not that they missed. They actually lost money during the quarter because supposedly they were doing a lot of warehouse buying and content spending. So terrible quarter. But the stock, as you would think, you know, only a schmuck like me would take a little bit of a bet short against this. I figure one of these times I'm gonna be right. I can go for a 2-3% loss on a small position, right? And one of these times is gonna be a nice move. But it went from down about 3% to now it's at an all-time high. I like that.
People love Amazon.
Yeah. I don't blame them, but I just think it's hysterical that how long do you let a company not only miss, but keep giving you the same excuse that they're buying warehouses? I guess the thought is this, that in their business, if they keep on making more money and more money, and they keep on building all these warehouses, that one day, they're going to stop building all these warehouses. Maybe they need fix-ups.
Right,
and all,
then,
but
then the water's going to wash ashore, and it's gonna, exactly. You're going to make tons of – it's going to show what this company is really all about.
Right. So The one thing they look at is operating earnings, operating margin. That's a big thing. This is what they really want to see because they want to strip out the extra expenses. Mm-hmm. And that's what everybody focused on, which was better. So, you know, again, maybe it's an excuse. Maybe this is the greatest company in the world, or maybe in the end it's going to be the biggest scam in the world. Either one.
Well, I blasted them in a column today in PC Magazine. People should go look that up. It wasn't about Amazon specifically. It was about targeted marketing. And I've now taken the position that targeted marketing is a scam.
Now, what do you mean by that? You mean when you go to a site and they know who you are, you got cookied, and they kind of find your interest where you've been and throw things right in front of you?
Yeah, there's just the stuff you definitely want to buy. You have to buy it now, those kinds of things.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's bull crap, and it doesn't work. I've never seen it happen. It doesn't work for me. And Amazon is the best example of this. They have the most – I've concluded – and they do target marketing supposedly. They have the most on me. I think of all the – I mean, I guess Google, you could make some extrapolation based on my searches about what I'm all about. But I'm also a writer, journalist, and I have to – I'm looking up stuff, all kinds of different things. You can't figure out too much from a writer by his searches. But right. Amazon knows what I buy. They know what I like. They know what I'm looking up and look to buy. They know what books I've got. They know I have a Kindle, and they know what books I buy for the Kindle, and they know what's on the Kindle that I may have uploaded. They know all this stuff, so they really know about me. So why – because I have one of those Kindles that has the advertisement at the front of it. You know, mm-hmm. It just sits there and changes ads every so often. Why do they do nothing but plug chick lit romance, buck romance novels – constantly on the front of my Kindle to me, knowing I've never even looked at one of these things. I've never bought one. I've never shopped for one.
And well, maybe that's why.
And I'm very unlikely to ever buy one, but that's what they're feeding me.
Let me ask you a question. You're telling me that they know more about you than anybody else, right?
For anybody besides my family, obviously.
Right. And they're suggesting something. You're admitting, by the way, that they know all this about you. They know about all these different things. And we also admit probably that computers are pretty good at putting things together and, you know, can do some predictive studies and all that.
Supposedly.
And they're coming across with these books for you that you think, you know, are just ridiculous. Now, maybe you should buy one. And maybe you're going to love it so much. You're going to realize what the power of this all is that you have been resisting all these years.
I've gotten a bunch of notes on this column from other people saying that the same thing's happening to them. This is not really targeting or checking me out or trying to get me to just say, oh, this guy would have bought these books. I've concluded that this is just spam because, in fact, the most effective version of advertising, if you can do it, is spam. Because you just send it out to everybody. They don't care. The thought might be this. Oh, maybe his daughter will walk by the Kindle sitting there on the table and say, oh, maybe I want to buy that book. No, this is just spam because they know. Because Amazon, this is my thesis. After studying targeted marketing to such an extreme, the money is in spam. Just send out huge amounts of just whatever, a shotgun approach, and the spammers make tons of money doing this. Amazon knows this, and that's what the reason these crazy things are showing up on my Kindle. They figure that I'm just as likely to buy this or as anything else because targeted marketing doesn't work.
Well, it's interesting because it is becoming a very much talked about area. I did some research because I needed an email client, and actually I came across some things that I thought were interesting from the perspective of understanding more about what these things do. And these are email systems that actually will – you know, you get a target market. There's some kind of a page set up. You go there. You look at something. You get a cookie, and you get into the whole system. They start tracking you, everything that you do on your particular sites, where you go, what you didn't go, what emails you opened, what you didn't, what you liked, and it kind of then starts shaping the direction of the marketing. Okay, and these things aren't cheap.
Yeah,
not
that's
at all.
The point. And they've got a good pitch. Sounds good on paper.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a scam, the idiot advertisers.
Maybe. It's no different than putting up a commercial on TV. You don't know who's watching, even though you try to put up something related to sports.
TV advertising is spam. It's essentially the same
thing. Of course. It is. Anyway, let's kind of move on some other things. But I think if anybody's out there, I think that maybe for a gift for John's birthday, one of those really juicy sex novels would be something.
Well, actually,
that you would probably...
I got an e-book coming out at the end of the week. They should buy that and send that.
Oh, what's
to
that called?
Me. It's going to be called The Inside Track 2013, and it's a compilation of my thoughts on the tech scene over the past couple years.
Ooh,
and
that should
it's
be good.
A collection of essays. It's it'll be very valuable for anybody interested in tech at all. But it's also entertaining because I write with humor.
Now you can't sign that.
No, I don't. If somebody wants my autograph, they can send me a card. No, you can't sign an e-book, but e-books are where it's at. And so this book will come out, and I'm going to have it on my website, and just keep an eye out for it. It's going to be on Amazon.
Obviously. Well, we'll have a link to it on DH Unplugged if you give me the information.
Yeah, I'll give you all that. It's going to be on the Kindle, EPUB, and PDF for everybody who has any sort of reader at all.
Mm. Well, let's talk about some of the things that are happening in the markets, because there's some really, I think, fascinating occurrences recently. We had, for example, this JP Morgan that was found that they did some manipulation of the energy and commodities markets. And then there was talk really quickly after that about they're going to be leaving the whole commodity market because now there's going to be further regulation on firms with the warehousing. And we've talked about this a little bit. And now – they get fined $400 million, and within, I think, a day or two, they said, okay, fine, and they paid it.
Yeah. Here, let me write you a check.
$400 million.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
That means they obviously made more than that in this whatever scam they were pulling.
Exactly, exactly. And you know what's interesting? There was a discussion by Senator Grassley on, I think it was CNBC or something. I caught it because – I thought it was really interesting how he was saying that, you know what, we're going after these firms, the hedge funds or the banks or whoever it is that are doing these certain things. And he was referencing the SEC Capital, SAC Capital. And you know what? It's really just a cost of doing business. You know, they do these bad things and all that. They have to look at it as a cost of doing business. And I'm thinking to myself, man, that's the message you're sending out there, that basically, you know what? Go do your thing. Go do your insider trading. If you get caught, you're going to have to kind of pony up some money. But in the meantime, it's the cost of doing business. It's just kind of how it is.
The cost of doing business.
That's what he said.
I wonder if the mafia can get away with that theory. You're under indictment for murder. Well, that's just the cost of doing business. Oh,
right.
Oh okay. Well, never mind.
Put up a patsy. So then so now this whole thing is coming down that banks are going to be possibly further regulated. Now, this may be a lot of blowhard talk and, you know, because really they don't want to make any significant moves against banks. Maybe on the other hand, it's also just a show of, you know, doing something that may be potentially beneficial to the public and against the banks because they're so easy on them. But nonetheless, it's, I think, an interesting play. One of the things that may be happening with all this is that they had some early info into this. We're starting to see that oil's coming down, broke to 104, which is still ridiculous. And we're seeing, obviously, commodities get really soft. And we saw that whole issue with gold and silver. So maybe some of this was kind of known, and many of these companies are starting to move out of this business. They don't have to deal with the regulation.
Yeah, there's plenty of unregulated stuff they can go into.
Right, exactly. Good point. Now, China, this was really cool. So China last week, they come out with some further manufacturing numbers that are pretty soft. And as a matter of fact, there were 47 on the flash index, which was much lower than they've had in the last several months and has been creeping lower. The Chinese government ordered more than 1,400 companies in 19 different industries to cut excess production capacity. And they want to shift to a more slower, more sustainable economic growth, which is kind of ridiculous. Who wants to – let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Let me ask you.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea. Slow down a little bit.
Yeah.
Make less money. You know, I mean –
Yeah,
you know,
that's going to really work with the Chinese mentality.
Right. So,
all this means is they're going to say, oh, my God, this isn't good. Let's just crank it up.
Yeah, possibly. But watch the commodity prices on this because they're also demanding – and creating regulations on how much excess capacity you can have in terms of the product that you're buying. So what they're going to do is they're going to slow down the importation of goods to choke off some of their production.
Yeah.
At least that's what they're saying. I think behind the scenes is something different. The fact is that they're slowing down and they want to make it look like it's an intentional deal.
That could be. That's an interesting theory. That they're actually naturally slowing down, and the Chinese are freaked about this, of course, because we know that that's not what they want to see. And so they're so this is bogus, is what you're.
I think so. I think this is just a. I think this is just. I mean, who in the right mind would want to do this? I mean, silly, isn't it?
I like your theory.
I think that the whole idea of a country.
And it, by the way, it wouldn't work. The Chinese aren't going to – they're just going to crank out stuff as fast as they can if they have the opportunity to sell it. And yeah, no, this makes more sense. That it's,
sorry, choking.
I noticed.
I apologize. Yeah, sorry. Let's see. What else do we have here? And to further the point there, that the industrial company's profits in June slowed again. So you're seeing this a natural slowdown, which – they've been trying to keep inflation down and all that, but I just can't – it's very hard for me to believe that any country would intentionally try to slow down the economy in the area of manufacturing if there is, in fact, enough demand. Because in theory, what that does is it creates less products and it creates more inflation. Why would they do that, right? Supply, demand?
Yeah. Yeah. Unless,
there's something's wrong with the whole equation.
Yeah.
Huh. Yep. So Gmail. You use Gmail at all?
I only use it as a backup.
Have you seen it lately?
Looked at it the last Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Did you see the new email inbox thing?
I didn't notice anything different.
It's different.
Well, let me go look at it.
Yeah. I don't know if they deployed this to everybody.
Well, I didn't.
But essentially
I couldn't tell the difference, to be honest. But I heard about
you'll
it.
You'll tell the difference. You'll tell the difference real quick if it's been put out to you.
All right, I'm looking. Oh, I got another social. Oh, I got tabs. This
you got
new.
Tabs.
Yeah, it says primary social and promotions.
Mm-hmm. Right, and you can
don't they just change it? I think they had the wrong title. There should be spam. Should be primary social and spam.
Right, and some of these, there's a couple extra. I think there's a couple extra you could put on there.
Yeah,
but what I think is really interesting, there's no. You can't customize this yourself. This is it. And
this is a product I'm not interested in using.
And what they did was they're making the rules of what goes in what tab.
Hmm.
You didn't choose anything, but things are in your various tabs probably.
Yeah.
And
well, actually, I have primary, and then the social's empty, and the promotions is empty. So. Mm. But I suppose something could be in there eventually.
The problem is that you may be getting email from, for example, you may be getting an email. Now, I get your various emails from No Agenda, for example, and they're now ending up in let's say, promotional or social.
They are?
Yep.
Really?
Yep, because it's a general email, right? You know some of it, right? You're not maybe directing it right to me. So somehow they're coming up with a way that they know whether it's a list company
most of the list companies come from certain IP addresses. So I use MailChimp.
Yeah.
And so it probably sees that. It says, oh, MailChimp. Yep. That's an email marketing company. There's just email marketing of some sort. So let's put it over here.
Yep.
Even though I think a lot of people would rather have it. But so I'm guessing that what you do is you say, no, this is going in the wrong box. I want it in my primary box. And
that makes the assumption that I'm smart enough to know to look at the other one after I got this and go through all my emails instead of just not realizing what's going on and that there's something in the promotional email box that I'm not going to want to look at because I think the word promotion is spam.
Yeah. So did my email go into spam to promotions?
I think it went to – I got to look. Well, I'll tell you next week.
Okay.
Where it goes. But I was surprised at some of the ones that went – and there's something called update or something like that too. There's another one you could put in there called update, which is – I don't know what that one is. But I get a lot of stuff
there. Doesn't make sense. What would it be?
It's like I think replies to you regarding –
that's so good. That should be in primary.
Yeah, there's something that it does.
Oh, this is bad. This is another grouse column of mine. You know, Google won't talk to anybody about any of this stuff. They keep it all a secret. They just expect everyone to put up with it. Their press department never returns calls. They don't care.
I don't know if you can reverse it. You may be able to reverse this back to the old inbox. But my thought is that eventually, if they like it, it's going to be for everybody, and you don't have any choices. So it's like
nobody's
going to
like this.
And the problem is, it's like, well, what if I want my spam? What if I enjoy that because I'm a lonely person or something? I don't know. And I don't get mail. I only get spam.
Well, then click on the promotion tab.
Yeah, I guess.
That's what they're going to say. Well, why don't you just click on the tab, see what's in there?
Yeah, just put the loser tab on there, you know?
Loser. Yeah.
I'm a loser. I have a lot of friends. I'm a loser. You know, that's the kind of, I look at the spam.
Well, I would assume that one of the things that they'll get out of this is that every time you click on this social tab, it registers with the Google giant computer in the sky, and they say, ooh, this guy's clicked on the social thing, and he clicks on it every time he comes to the mailbox, so then he must be a social guy. Or I don't know, but they're using it for some marketing reason, I'm sure.
I don't know. I mean, I get things in each one of those, and they split my stuff up from previous emails. They kind of did a filtering, too.
Interesting.
So I haven't figured it out. I just let it just do its thing right now, and I click, click, click if I see there's anything in there. I delete, I do, you know, just kind of makes three more clicks for me.
Yeah, you got three. Now you have three email boxes instead of one.
Plus your various filters and folders.
Right.
Yep. Okay, so let's see. I got a couple other things I can – if you want to talk about Google, by the way, I have a few things to mention about their app service.
What about it?
I went and tried some of the apps. I wanted to do the – unified email box for a company, and they have some deal where it's $50 a user per year, and if you pay for an annual deal, it's a little bit less, and this and that. And I went back and forth with their customer service, and I got to tell you, they were great. They called me actually directly, which was unbelievable. So I did some stuff and all that, and then I realized, you know what, this is just not going to work. The way that they have it set up, I'm really going to need more users, and I can't use these aliases, and it's one giant email bot. It's just obnoxious. So I said, you know what, I can't do this. So they told me about 2 weeks after I paid, I said, you know what, I'm not gonna use this. I'm gonna cut down a user, and I'll just keep one of them to whatever. So they said, that's fine, but just to let you know, you have to pay the whole year. So I have to pay the whole year even if I cancel.
What?
Yep.
I would challenge them on that.
Yep.
Pay with American Express and just tell American Express it's bull crap, and they'll stop the charges.
I'm afraid of Google though. What I mean, you know.
What are they gonna do to you?
I don't know. I don't wanna mess with Google.
They're not making your life any richer, from what I can tell.
Yeah, they'll redirect all my searches and
send to porn to kiddie porn sites.
Right at the exact wrong time
with all kinds of auto downloads. Yeah, that would work.
Right.
What all the right, heck Microsoft happened to me?
Microsoft seems to be giving in, or maybe I don't know what they're doing. Giving up. They're making programs, or they're talking about making programs out loud. They're saying this, that they're making programs for the iOS. Which I think is a really good idea, by the way, because, you know, they're in the business to sell programs. They're in the business to sell, obviously, anything from the operating system all the way through programs. But one of the things they've always left out was they won't, because of their pride, they won't do anything with Apple, although they did make
– They do Office for
Office
Apple.
Suite, yeah. Apple. They wouldn't do anything for iOS. Let's put it that way.
Right.
But who knows if that would have helped them or not, you know, get them more visibility. But
well,
now
I think it would have been a good idea for one reason. They could do these apps, try to get people to use them, like some pretty cool apps if they could do them. They got the talent. And then when they brought out their Windows phone, they could port them immediately and say, well, it's over there, so it's also over here, because they can't get anyone to write apps for the Windows phone.
Yeah, like almost like what Google did. Google did that.
Yeah. So, yeah, they pushed everyone to use the search on iOS.
Right. And who has more sales? Google.
Yeah.
Although it's not as profitable. Anyway, so they're giving in, it seems, and they're going to be doing something for that. Because, you know, for the years, they wouldn't even mention the name Apple. They wouldn't even talk about the company in any kind of respectful way. And obviously, you know, I think that was a bad misstep on their part. So I don't know what this is, but it seems to be, I think, beneficial. But we'll see how it plays out. I mean, if I know Microsoft, by the time they get done with coming up with a program and all that, it's going to be a while. You know, and we could have at that point.
Yeah, the market could be completely upside down by then.
Yeah, you may not even have touch phones anymore. You may have think phones or something. I don't know. You know, breathe phones.
I mean, it took them forever to get the iPhone, or not the iPhone, the Windows phone out.
Right.
I mean, the market was already halfway to Mars by the time they took off.
Right. So who knows what's going to happen with this. Now, some other interesting things that are in the news. President Obama has now said he's narrowed down the candidates for the Fed chief, you know, for the next replacement for Mr. Bernanke, which is interesting because I think I talked to you about who is probably in the running. Now, Larry Summers threw his hat in to the ring to possibly get this post. And, of course, we had Janet Yellen, who is, as I mentioned last show, is probably more inclined to give away money than Bernanke is.
Yeah, which is, well, of course, everyone, you would disagree with this, but I personally think that's great.
Right. Well, I understand. So for a from a market viewpoint, possibly, and maybe even a personal viewpoint, great. From an economic standpoint and looking at this, trying to be logical about it, that's a problem.
Yeah, so that's what everyone seems to think.
So now it seems that Larry Summers, who was previously pretty much, you know, I would not say he was terribly negative, but he was not positive or even neutral. He definitely leaned on the negative side of all this quantitative easing and all this easy money policy that's being pursued. Well, we know that President Obama wants to continue with this path, okay? So he's not going to put somebody in there that doesn't agree with this and that doesn't go along with the game plan, right? So it's also interesting that I find that at this about the same time where President Obama said that he has narrowed his, you know, candidates, that Larry Summers has changed his tune, that he's a little bit lighter on the whole QE, and maybe there is something that could be beneficially found from it.
Yeah, you know, this is not good. In my opinion, you know, if you're going to put somebody in and you want – if your thesis for the whole situation to stabilize the market or to stabilize the depression so we're not in something like 1933, you have to put somebody in who's sincere about it. You can't put some guy just saying that so he can get the job. He's not. He doesn't have any deep understanding of the need. Again, this is like not everybody's perspective, but of the need to pump money into the system.
But I find it. Well, we'll see. I don't know if he. I mean, he was Treasury Secretary. I just, from my knowledge of him, from my observations of him, from what I've seen, I just somehow I'm just not seeing it. I'm just not seeing him in that position.
I can't see him in it either. He's not academic enough. All these guys that have had this job are ponderous, older guys who seem to have a good grasp of whatever. I could be. Maybe they have no grasp, but they seem to have a grasp, and they intellectualize a lot of this. And they Summers just doesn't fit the bill, but neither does that woman,
Yellen.
Yeah, Yellen.
I don't know.
You think? I mean, well, I know it'd be fun to have a woman in there and see what happens.
Well, first of all, President Obama is inclined to possibly bring in a woman. I mean, that, you know, he is definitely pro bringing in the customary non-white, comb back hair guy into an office. I mean, he's going for more of an alternative in a lot of his posts, right?
Yeah.
So this could be. We'll see. I mean, and she does, at this point right now, she is the second.
Right. She's the vice chair.
So it does make sense. We'll see what happens.
No, she's white haired.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good point.
So that fits.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. She, like I said, she's very easy money policy.
Good.
Have you been following this eminent domain issue?
No, not at all. I mean, I have, but only from right wing rags.
Okay,
you know, the government's taken over a lot of property.
Right. So this whole New York Times, which is definitely not a right wing rag, right?
Yeah.
They're reporting that there is a few cities, and one of them in California, of course, who is going to be using the eminent domain by the local government with a mortgage provider to seize homes that are basically underwater in their mortgages, okay, and then reissue new mortgages that are lower and allowing the homeowner to get back into their property with positive equity.
Hmm.
Now,
how's that
going
to work?
How's that going to work? Let's find out. So here's an example from Zero Hedge, and I thought it was a pretty reasonable one. The city is offering to buy the loan now, at what they consider fair market value. So in this example that we have here, it says that a home is mortgaged for about $400,000 and the home is worth about $200,000, definitely underwater. Now, the city plans to buy the loan for about $160,000, about 80%, 20% discount of the value of the home. $160,000 is a 20% off the value now, but also 80% of the value of the home, and a discount that factors in the risk of default, whatever that is. Then the city would then write down the debt to about $190,000 approximately and allow the homeowner to refinance at the new amount and maybe buy some added government programs to help it along a little bit. Now, the differential of $30,000 goes to the city and the investors who put up the money to buy the loan, and some closing costs and a few other things. So banks are a little bit concerned about this because, you know, if the city's going to have to use the eminent domain power, right, which is, hey, I can take that because it's for use of the city or
the public good.
So if they're going to do that, the question is that they're going to probably try to haggle not only the valuation of it so they can write it down and get a good value out of it, but also possibly then negotiate or renegotiate the loan deal that they have with the bank, saying, hey, we're utilizing eminent domain here, and this is the vote that we had, and this is what we will pay you back on this mortgage. Now, what's interesting is that, first of all, that the homeowner would have any kind of positive equity in the house is unbelievable, right? I mean, that's a gift.
Yeah, it's a big gift.
Right. And the second thing
is – because
actually
it's not just the positive equity, but it's their underwater stuff. I mean, they make out big time if this ever goes through. I just can't see this happening.
Now, the only benefit is that it frees up money for them, so therefore they have more money to spend on whatever it may be and maybe pay their taxes on their house. Maybe that's what the city's looking for. And at the same time, if they're going to negotiate this with the banks, you know, the question is going to be, how's that going to work? But the other thing that's going into this that's behind the scenes that you got to think about is, well, where's this money coming from for the investors to put up some of this money to buy the loan and all that, right? Well, there's going to be package programs written for this, right back to where we started. Now, these may seem like a slam dunk, no risk kind of deal, right? You put up this money and you do the deal and you do the closing and then you get money back pretty quickly and there's been no risk because it's just been a transactional cost or maybe some time. But at the same time, this is gaining some ground. And the thing is that one of the problems is that, you know, homes that are, if they're that much underwater, they're also falling into disrepair. The people that are, you know, have given up because they realize, you know, what can happen? And the house is not going to go up by $200,000 in any reasonable amount of time, right? So, you know, they're giving up on the whole idea of even keeping the house in good shape, potentially.
Because they figure they're going to lose the house, so what's the point to just write it out?
Right. So this gets into a lot of very strange areas in terms of, you know, how there may be people who are very deserving of this is a tough one, but I don't know if they're deserving, but that we're not – let's put it this way. There may be many people who did not do things terribly wrong during the time when they were buying a house. They just wanted to buy a house. They weren't doing crazy. They weren't, you know, really doing anything out of the ordinary. Then there's those people who, you know, really went on a limb and stretched and didn't think of anything else but taking the free money that was out there.
Right.
And you can't really differentiate between the two.
Well,
probably. How can you?
Well, you can't unless you could have a conversation with them and you could probably figure it out. But
yeah, but then the bank doesn't – they don't care. If this is a moneymaker, they're not going to care.
Yeah.
So anyway, by using this, it's like I said, it could be a real problem for banks, and we'll see what happens.
What kind of stock market effect do you think this would have in terms of what kind of companies would benefit or be hurt by this? The builders? Well, what about the builders?
The builders could be because in a way you have excess capacity that stays on the market now. So nobody's like leaving the house, just foreclosing on it, and then, you know, the bank takes it back and then they want to go out and buy a new house. So they're staying in their homes.
Right.
So that's something
there.
Slow
down turnover.
Yep, exactly. Could it help the select lenders, you know, these lenders that would be doing this? Maybe they have a whole list of lenders that will be doing this. And who knows, maybe it's going to be further guaranteed and sweetened by the city for them to do that. So the deal that the investor – who puts up the money for this and then the city gets the money out of it and they get out of it. It could be some of these mortgage companies, that are non-bank, or maybe some of the mortgage, when you do a refinancing and the extra costs involved and all this.
Do we have a guy here who keeps advertising on the radio and his punchline is, it's the biggest no-brainer in the history of mankind, he says.
Yeah, he's probably right, depending on what your rate is.
Yeah, maybe.
But at the same time, you know, he's getting all those closing costs for refinancing, which are, you know, he gets the title insurance again. You know, most people don't know this, that you know, you pay for this title insurance, which is the protection of in the event right, there's a long title.
Right.
Right. That goes to something like the attorney's title fund and all that. But it's essentially the attorneys that get the money on that.
Yeah.
I don't think most people know that.
Most and I find it's just a process. People just do it.
Right. But I think it's really interesting that if in theory you were to refinance today, refinance in 6 months, refinance again in a year, you have to pay the property, the title insurance, potentially three times. And if you didn't know this, you could talk to the providers and negotiate with them.
Yeah.
Most places will negotiate and say, hey, you know what? You paid it. We just did the research for you and all that. We're going to give you a nice discount on it. But they're not going to probably tell you up front.
Well, now they know. This is the reason to listen to this show.
Yeah, exactly. Think about all the money we just saved you. Well, all eyes will be on the Fed tomorrow and jobs on Friday, and hopes are again high that we'll have another comment by Bernanke that is going to be very easy on markets. You know, as many times as they come out and say something that's easy on the markets is as many times as the market will actually either reverse or move higher. So in theory, if the same message is said every single day, and there's good reason, let's say, for the markets to move down, let's just say, but if the same message is said every day, for some reason, they just seemingly pop up. As a matter of fact, the markets have had more comebacks in the past few weeks than Robert Downey Jr.
Did you write that down? And
yeah.
That was you.
Yeah. That was
your line. You probably picked that about 1 p.m. You were thinking about something, and the line came, and you wrote it down for the purpose of this show, knowing it. You were hoping to God it would maybe get a laugh.
Yeah, well, did it get a list? I got a laugh from you. If you play it back, you heard a laugh.
It was a sympathy laugh.
It was a sympathy laugh.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. All right. So fine.
Yeah, I think he's only made two comebacks, but you know, anyway.
Who, Robert Downey Jr.? You're kidding me?
Yeah.
He's made – come on.
Yeah, two.
He's made a lot. He's been in and out so many times. I mean, you know, that it's – you know, I don't want him to use another
– You ever see him on a talk show?
He's pretty antsy, isn't he?
He's antsy and kind of out there. It's as though he's looking for a – this is a good line. It's as though he's looking for a sniper in the audience. I mean, he's just got that look like he's going to get shot or something. I mean, it's very, very unnerving to watch him on a talk show.
Not as unnerving as it was to watch Chevy Chase do his late night comedy.
No, he was faxing it in. He didn't even do anything. He just looked like he was a lost cause from the first show.
It was so scary to watch. It was so upsetting. I found it very upsetting to watch. Huh. That Magic Johnson, that was pretty bad too. But anyway, we could talk about this stuff. I mean, Johnny Depp, you ever see him?
We need a new show.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Dvorak and Horowitz on entertainment. Okay.
Yep, exactly. Speaking about entertainment, oh, by the way, so just let's finish this point though, that so tomorrow we also have a GDP revision. We also have at the end of the day the potential for an end of month rebalance. And you're probably going to see there's some word on the street there's going to be a big rebalance from stocks into bonds. And, you know, you have the end of the month anyway. So you have a lot of things happening. You have the Fed decision. You have the GDP revision. You have and again, everything is looked at from the aspect of the Fed. So if GDP comes in light, maybe the Fed's going to be better. If it comes in strong, maybe they're going to taper. But if it comes in strong, that's good. You know, it's kind of a glass is half full, not half empty concept right now.
Yeah.
And they call it kind of Goldilocks, I guess, in the Wall Street vernacular. But I want to talk about also there's a couple things. I gave you a chart there of one of those crazy stocks.
Yeah.
USU. Did you take a look at that?
Yeah, I did.
I tried to get a short on that, to be honest with you, but it was none available. That stock has gone up from about $3.
So you couldn't get a short on it?
Nope. Tried. No shorts available, which is another reason why it spiked like that, because, you know, they kind of closed down the short side. So USU is kind of a uranium company, and supposedly we're getting some kind of deal from the government on some kind of new uranium power deal. I don't think this was a pump and dump necessarily. It looked a little bit more.
What did it close at?
Let's see. It closed today. It was down 36%. Let me look.
So it went from $3 to $30 in 2 weeks, and then it hit. It just fell without shorts.
Yeah, it's at 19.
19. Huh. That's a very strange looking operator. This doesn't look legit.
Yeah, something's weird about it. Now, what's interesting is, though, it did at least play technically relatively well. If you look at, I gave you a history. You can see where that top line was there, that cutoff point where we
the red
show
line.
Yeah, that's significant. That's not just lines. Those are significant, what we call market profiles. As a matter of fact, I wasn't planning on exactly talking about this here, but these particular chart patterns, and this is just a very simplified way to look at a chart. You can kind of track back and see where the support and resistance levels are. These are now available on TradeStation. We wrote these for TradeStation users, and you can go over to the TradeStation Strategy Network, and you can get these plugged right into your trading software. There's three or four different indicators in what we call in the Commander series. Very cool stuff.
Yeah, it sounds interesting enough, but what on this chart with all these little lines all over the place?
Yeah,
down at three when you get the triple, the double green, and then a red.
Mm-hmm.
What does that tell you?
Well, if you look at if you kind of just take a look at one of the sets, you know, don't look at all of them for a second. These are all ranges of where there has been significant amounts of, we'll call it resistance and support. And in between those points, in between the red and the green, look at the one far left. It's the most spread out you can see, is a point of highest volume and where there's really relatively no volume. So where there's when you go below the green, it's an indicator not to go short, but don't be long. This is below a key level where there's been high volume. What this does is different than just drawing lines on a chart where you can see trends. This is looking at the actual buying of the position from a buy or sell and the price up, the price down, how much volume was put into it at any given level. And then what we did was we come up with a calculation of where the levels are weakest, where there's the very, very weak levels of buying or selling or no volume at all. And those are usually very fast zones. Those move very, very quickly. You notice on all the way to the right, when it broke above that blob of red and green there, see that?
Yeah.
It took off. Right? Now, this may be a different situation because this stock is a little weird, but essentially what this is saying is that, you know, if it goes below our green line, our level of support, that this is an opportunity to short because you have above you now a significant amount of volume that obviously broke. There was support at that point. We could see that there's exceptional amounts of volume. And then we do a further calculation of when it swings up or down and where it is. If you look at this on a normal stock, you could find where these zones are very nicely by this very simplistic look. We also have one that's more detailed and gives you like the real nooks and crannies. And then one that is, we call it autopilot. It pretty much gives you a buy signal or sell signal.
Do you have a way of taking your algorithm that does this? Mm-hmm. And this is kind of an interesting chart from that perspective, although I'm always skeptical. But do you have something like I take U.S. Steel? Can I just put X into this thing in a single
yep.
cough out to me? It says look, yep. and it'll show me the same kind of crap.
Yep. And we have this kind, which is a very simplistic look. This is kind of this is a stripped down version, so you can see.
We're
going to
have a copy of this, of course, in the NH Unplugged website.
Yeah.
Of this chart.
What happens is you'll see that. This look that you're looking at here, which is just three lines, horizontal lines, which tell you, you know, kind of levels. There's another one that has what we call a profile, which gives you the entire range and where the real nooks and crannies of the buying and selling were on a much different look than you've seen normally with volume. And then there's one that has a signaling algorithm that will readjust constantly and show you where the long entries are and the short entries. Or the not to enter.
So if we took this chart and put it into the signaling mm-hmm. algorithm, where was it signaling to buy?
Hang on. I got that right here. Bear with me. USU. A signal to buy at – it went – let me see here. So it went green on the daily chart at – 460.
At 460?
Yeah, and right now it is on the daily chart. Let me look. It's still green. You have till about, I'm looking here, about $17, $18 before it breaks to, it tells you, hey, out. So, I mean, you could have taken profits here. Again, this thing is moving wildly. This is ridiculous. This is not normal.
Yeah, so, something's going on.
Right. So, but the point is it's signaling you to get out at about 17 and change. It's just moving too fast. I mean, it's obviously moving too fast. You could do this on any time frame. You could do it on 60 minutes.
Of course, the other thing is, I'm looking at this thing again. Mm-hmm. At 460, you could have put your order in a normal system, and the thing could have been at 25 by the time it covered from the looks of it.
Again, this is a very bizarre example. I just, you know what I mean? This is weird. This is the stock moving way too fast. 30-40% in a day is ridiculous.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye. I'd like to look at
any stocks you want to look at. And actually, there's a cool deal that I'll share with you that until the end of the year, TradeStation, this I haven't really told anybody yet, but we have a special deal with TradeStation. A couple of things. First of all, a regular deal is you can get the platform for free till the end of the year, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And the second thing is we have a special arrangement that if you open an account with them, essentially our indicators are free because they'll pay us and you get the money back in the form of commission rebates of 20% or so. So that's, you know, it kind of works out pretty well.
Hmm. All right. Well, maybe anyway, I'll look into that.
Anyway, let's talk about Einhorn. He covered his short bet on JCPenney and his long on Microsoft. I thought that was kind of interesting. And HLF, Herbalife, which we know the whole battle there with Ackman and Icon and those guys. So Herbalife comes out with their earnings, and they had pretty good earnings, I mean, from the surface of it. And the stock was up about 8% or so. Ackman comes out in the middle of the day and said, hey, you know what? Boy, there's a real concerning issue with this operating margin. Again, a little maybe obscure, finding one little issue maybe, or maybe a big issue, but nonetheless. Stock ends up the day down 1%. Hmm. So some crazy moves going on there. Facebook. Do you see Facebook?
Have
you seen what's going on?
Well, it's what?
It's like $38 again.
Yeah, I know. It's just gone way up.
It was
I don't know
earnings.
What's going on, but
well, they had earnings a few days ago.
Fallen in love with the thing.
Well, they had earnings a few days ago, and everybody's all ecstatic about it and all happy about it. And the earnings were good. There was a lot more mobile uptake, although I still am having a hard time understanding the revenue from mobile, but okay.
You and everyone else.
And there you go. The stock was up 30%.
That sounds like another good short. Let's take a look at it.
Yeah.
What is the symbol on that again? Face?
FFB. Actually, let me pull out my system. Hang on.
Bring out the big guns, bring out that contraption.
Yeah. Well, on a daily basis, it's showing a long that went long at about 33, and now where's about 38. And the thing is, though, here's the problem: above 38, there's nothing. So think of it like, you know, as you go higher in the sky, the air gets thinner and easier for a plane to go faster and faster, right?
Yeah.
Or for that matter, if you're in a dive, plane goes faster also. So we're not talking about horizontal here. We're talking about a dive.
So the thesis is that with Facebook, that this thing could skyrocket like Amazon or Tesla or Netflix when they were on their swings, or it could just crash and burn from here. Right.
Right. I mean, 38 is where the point's going to be, you know, which around
so
there.
So it goes to 39 and this thing is going to skyrocket. Is this what you're telling me?
There's nothing above it. It may play out
so
a little
no
bit.
There's no resistance.
There's nothing. It opened up at 38 and then went down immediately right after that on the IPO, right?
Yeah.
Mm. So is there anything above here?
Mm-mm.
Yep, that's it. That doesn't mean that it's going to skyrocket. That's going to mean that if it does reach that level, I will tell you that if it does, there's going to be shorts that cover, you know, let's call it 38 and a quarter, just for the little bit of extra there. There's going to be a lot of shorts that did hold the short that's going to cover. And, you know, from there, you may see, you know, a quick move, and then we'll see what has to happen from there and who's going to be chasing it moving forward, you know, because then it becomes possibly, you know, you see a little bit of some of the players that got in on the IPO that said, oh, my God, if it ever gets back to my IPO price, that's going to be
it.
Resistance.
Yeah.
That's going to be resistance. That's 38. If it ever gets back to my 38, then, yeah, the other people are like, hey. Yeah, the other people are like, hey, I knew it was going to come back. I'm holding forever, you know? And then right. If it does go below 38, those guys start a panic sell.
Yeah, I can
like,
see that.
Oh, man, I should have sold. I should have sold. Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. You know how you know? So they go through that whole mental anguish.
Everyone's been there.
Yeah. A couple other things real quick.
Hold on a second. Let's take a look. Let me take a look at some of the Facebook key statistics. Let's see. The trailing price earnings is 173. Yeah. Forward PE is 40, so that's not bad. The PEG is 1.6.
not terrible.
No, not
but
terrible.
Not for a growth stock, supposedly. You know, I suppose it's a growth stock.
Market cap of $90 billion. I'm just looking at it from the perspective of putting a short on our little game.
Oh.
That's what I was looking for, something that would say, yeah.
The only thing is that I think what you have here is a momentum trade. I was surprised it was up 30% after those earnings. That was a little bit hot. But okay, so it is what it is. And, you know, you have a situation where they're I don't want to say they're starting to prove themselves, but at least some of the doubt is out. But at the same time, if you think about just, 6 months ago, boy, there was a different opinion, wasn't there?
There's always a different opinion depending on the situation. That's why these opinions are useless.
Yeah, but this is a Momo play. I mean, it wouldn't be the worst short, and I would say that if you could take it, let's say above, I would say, I mean, in reality, the way you'd play this is you take half a position at like 38 and change, and take another position somewhere in the 39 range just to give us some breathing room, and then if it goes much above there, you break your position. But you know, that's how you would play it in real life.
Yeah, but in our game, we can't do that.
Correct. So you could play a price, you know, that if it gets to a certain point that you would short it, but that may also mean that you don't get into it.
Right, right. But again, that's not the way we play our game, and I'm going to either have to short it or not, or wait a week.
Yep. Whatever you like to do.
Yeah, it's only money.
Yep.
Oh, wait a minute. There is no money involved.
Good news. As a matter of fact, great segue. Let's get over to the stocks over there. We need some stock music of some sort. This is a game that we play.
Start producing the show. Yeah. I'll start producing with some whooshes and things like that.
And here we go. We're in the actually stock headquarters here of DH Unplugged, and we just moved the studio real quickly so that we can get involved. And look at do you see that wall behind us of those stock quotes? Beautiful,
yeah,
isn't
look
it?
At that. Yeah, it's amazing what you can do with
fantastic.
The green screen.
The technology we have is just remarkable. Now, this is not a recommendation to buy or sell any security that we talk about. This is just a kind of a fun thing that we do. We track some of our stock picks and some of the things that go on, some of the ideas that we have. Horowitz & Company, John C. Dvorak, or Andrew Horowitz may own the securities mentioned, and we will disclose that if appropriate on the actual Google spreadsheet that we have that does a great job of updating all the stocks in real time. And I will mention something to you. Now, John has had the winner this year so far, right? Live Nation up 64%.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, that's actually what you're about to be unseated. If all things work the way they should, by tomorrow you will be unseated.
By Questor?
Yep. Yeah. Came out with earnings tonight, and they were up 16% after hours or 15% after hours, and that would put that up about, we'll call it around 70% since we bought it on in June. Which also beat you on time frame.
You definitely beat me on time.
Yeah.
Which accounts for something.
Yep.
Because I'm basically sitting on dead money, even though and Cree is still hanging in there. That could still be competitive, but it's not going to.
That's had a lot of upgrades, and there's a lot of good things about that. And you know, that's about 55% since February. Now, some of the ones that I'm pretty amazed with are, for example, I'm still just in absolute shock over this McGraw-Hill, because if you think about this, the government was coming down on them real hard, right?
Yeah.
And it was in the news for let's call it 2-3 weeks. It was pretty hot. I haven't heard anything about this.
No, it's over.
Not a word.
Yeah, no, that somebody did a deal.
And that's it, up 29%. This was like the stock that was going to get crushed by the government, and all it was a great buying opportunity. You just wonder, man, if this was orchestrated, how great an idea it would be. You know, to take stocks down.
I believe that a lot of these things are orchestrated.
Hmm. To take a stock down and then just buy into it?
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, if that was the case, it's brilliant and it's doing – and if that is the case, they're doing a heck of a job over and over again.
Yeah, well, I don't think everything. I mean, I just think there's a few items that show up like this one, which is an anomaly that could have been rigged.
Yep. I think Amazon's going to come out. I believe that – I got to look at this, but it was profitable. I have to look at the exact numbers on this, but I think it was profitable for a while and then it kind of shifted back. So it's probably going to be stopped out here. JP Morgan's up 13.5%. Outer Wall, by the way, which dropped pretty well yesterday. It was kind of like sitting there doing nothing. Probably don't know what that stock is because they changed the name to something which I have no idea what it means, from Coinstar, which did represent the company because they had those coin machines for a while.
They still do.
Yeah, and it's the same company, just a new name. And they have the red box machines, and they have a variety of, we'll call it, unattended types of vending machines as well, coffee and, you know, you didn't live in New York, but did you have like an automat where you lived?
No, we never had one. But I went to New York, I forgot when, but it was like late 70s or early 80s. No, it had to be the mid 80s. Whatever it was, the automat was still there.
Yeah.
It was across from the Biltmore, which was torn down. And I went in there to see what it was. You know, it was an old funky thing from, I guess, the 20s or something. And it was just like a cafeteria with no line. It was just a bunch of, you know, little things you put some money in and open the door and grab a sandwich. I thought it was pretty cool. Because yeah. It was the end of it.
Yep. Yep, it was.
But I did get to see it. I felt that I got to see history.
Yeah, you did. We also have that another thing that's pretty amazing. I think it's amazing, at least. And it was my idea, but that's not why it was amazing. It's just that corn is down 20% this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you got a good little – you shorted it. It was good. I was skeptical, and there you are.
I mean, I got to be honest with you. I didn't think it was going to be down 20%. You know, so we got a 20% gain on the short, which is remarkable. Questcore we mentioned, and Vivio, which I still don't know what that does exactly, but you bought that because of some insider buying up 21%. Berkshire Hathaway, actually, all things considered, it doesn't move a lot. You know, the whole thesis last week was that the potential default of Detroit would hurt some of the players that insure their bonds, and Berkshire Hathaway happened to have one of the biggest positions there. So we'll see how that plays out moving forward, if, you know, that's going to go. But, you know, just kind of like, I mean, I made a little bit of money since last week.
So what do you got lined up for us this week?
I would have talked to you a little bit about this, but the popularity of e-cigarettes. Oh,
good luck with this one.
Popularity of e-cigarettes. You know, you're not a smoker anymore. You're a vapor. V-A-P-E-R.
Vapor.
And stores are retail stores are opening up around the country and in New York as well. Now, I'm not condoning this, and I the whole thing is bizarre to me, by the way. You could essentially light up in your office.
I like Philip Morris as a company, but I don't think this is going to do the trick. I think legalization of marijuana
let's just be clear.
And Philip Morris is that's the combination.
By the way, I'm short this. This is it said buy, but it's short.
Oh, okay.
I'm going short.
Okay,
Philip Morris.
That makes more sense to me.
Yeah, sorry. Going short this. I looked at Lorillard and I looked at Philip Morris. And actually, if you look at the charts on Philip Morris, there seems to be a lot more of a gaping hole potential if it doesn't play out. And we did see that they had a miss on the earnings most recently, which I thought was really interesting that they had the miss that they had, and that I started to put a few things together, and it seemed to me that there is the possibility that all those people that wanted to quit smoking, you know, that have had the desire to do so, and they have this other option, which is smoking anyway, but not really thinking of smoking, you know, and I see it popping up at every gas station that I go to. If you go inside these.
Yeah, you're assuming this is a short-term crappy fad.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, Philip Morris isn't producing these.
Oh, so why are you shorting them?
Because if they're not producing them, I think
– Oh, you're actually long on the crappy fad and
yep.
and short on Philip Morris because they're not in on it.
Yes.
Yeah, I still think Philip Morris and marijuana is going to be the real killer.
Not hash?
Hash. Nobody smokes hash.
I was in Morocco. It's going around there pretty good.
I'm sure it was. Stinking up the place.
Yeah.
I have one insider – it's a weird one, but this guy's – but when the vice chairman of a company is buying millions of dollars, you know, $30 million and $10 million at a pop of his own company, I have to assume he knows something.
Something.
Yeah. Freeport Copper and Gold FCX.
FCX. I know them well.
Ah, good.
Freeport McMoRan.
Yeah, McMoRan.
Well, they're trading at about 29 or so, right?
Yeah, or 28 maybe.
Yeah, this is a copper and a – really, he's buying that much of it, huh?
Yeah, he's buying like crap loads.
I wonder if somebody's going to take them out.
Or they have a big discovery that they haven't announced.
Yeah, but if they do, I mean, prices are down and they've been in the doghouse
for a long time. Yeah, maybe the Chinese are going to buy them. I don't know. All I know is this is a lot of buying for no reason in a crappy market. It either tells – I don't think these guys throwing his money away. And so I think as an insider trading opportunity, I think this would be one I'd go with.
Yeah, I hear you. It's not insider trading, just to kind of clarify again. John says it all the time. It's buying – we see
no,
insiders.
No, I don't mean insider in the illegal sense.
Right.
But actually I do.
I hear you.
I do, oh, yeah, but I don't. So you got to kind of think about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody, we're going to have the listing of John's to-be-published book that happens next week on when it comes. We'll have it on DH Unplugged. I'll put it on the Disciplined Investor as well. You'll see it over at Dvorak.org/blog and everywhere you look. And hopefully it will also be replace those steamy novels that they have on the front page of the Kindle, and you can see it right there for yourselves.
That'll be the day. Yeah, okay.
We'll see. All right, I'll see you next week.
All right, bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.